All right, so we'll get started here with this nice roundtable format and me up above everybody in the cloud here. Welcome to this morning's session on establishing metrics for mLearning. I'm Mike Taylor, and I'm the Academic Director of the Center for Mobile Research and Innovation at Seton Hall, and I'm going to be moderating. This panel discussion is really more of an invitation to take part in a longer conversation about mLearning and establishing metrics. I don't think that any of the panelists would say that they have the answers today. It's really just to get a foundation started and to get the ball rolling to really start talking about this in a more substantial way. It's always good form, I think, to define your terms before you leap in and start having this discussion. And mobile is one of those terms that can have many different definitions. So we actually consider just having that be one of the questions that we bantered around. What is mobile? But we realized pretty quickly that if we open the door to that, we probably won't get to talk about metrics very much. That could take up the whole session. So instead, I'm going to give you kind of a working definition of what we're thinking of in terms of mobile for this session today. And that's something that would be on the table to have a broader discussion about at some point as well. Mobile, if we were in 1995, would probably mean a laptop, right? It would be something you can pick up. It's portable. You can move it from your desk to somewhere else. Today, the way we're going to define it is not really in terms of a form factor or a device-specific thing. It's really a usage, what makes something mobile. And the idea that we're playing around with is that a mobile device is one that's always on, it's always connected, and it's always with the person, or it's there a lot. Right? And that means that it could be a smartphone, it could be a tablet, depending on your usage. And that's really the idea, that mobile is defined by the usage of the device. And if we take it to mean that, then I think a logical extension is that these types of devices, because of those three factors, really are much more personal. People tend to have a much more deep personal connection to that technology. And as part of that, how they use it may be very, very idiosyncratic. And when you start talking about using them in terms of learning, with mLearning, well then, does that make it a challenge to really assess what's the impact? Where is the learning happening, and what type of learning? So that's kind of the picture that we're working with the panel today. We see, if you look at the program, mobile is all over the place. There's initiatives in scope and scale at a lot of different universities, and we don't see very much in discussion of assessment of how well they're doing or even what are the objectives that we're trying to achieve. So we would like to start moving towards that direction with this conversation today. We're going to be sitting in a circle, so it's really easy to have a conversation in room. If you're observing from outside on the web, then you can use Twitter, and the hashtag is right here. It's ELI12_SESS22. Okay. Here are three questions that we'll be going through today. These can change if all of you would rather turn the conversation to a different topic, and it really should be participatory instead of just presentation. But this is what we're planning on covering. And the panelists today, I'll just give the quick introductions and we can get started. We have Deborah Keek-Franson, who is the Director of Academic Technology at the University of Colorado at Boulder. David Middleton, who is the Executive Director of the Center for Mobile Research and Innovation at Seton Hall. And we have Glenda Morgan, who is the e-learning strategist at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. All right, thank you. First question. What are the most appropriate methodological approaches for determining the value of mLearning?
Yes. Okay. I know we're not going to get bogged down on definitions here. And you know I love you, David. But I don't think mLearning exists. And I think it's going to be problematic if we keep talking about it. But that was just an aside. We can fight about that later. because even though I'm an e-learning strategist, I think I didn't make that title up. I think it should just be about learning. You know, otherwise we can start talking about desk learning and chair learning and standing up at a lab learning. But so I think thinking about mobile and where mobile fits into learning is going to be much more stand the test of time and is going to be much more productive in terms of things. But What are some of the big issues as we sort of think about mobile learning and how we assess that? I think in some ways it's not that different from general assessment. I think we really need to do some assessment and evaluation in terms of measuring the impact, that sort of thing. I think we need to do a lot of rethinking of how we do that for the use of technology generally and for learning generally. So looking at mobile is sort of a subset of that, but I think there are some peculiar issues going on that make it somewhat special, and one relates to the way that we use the technology, the other one to the way that it brings us content. I think what is special about mobile, and Michael brought that out in his definition, is that it is always with you. We have such an intimate relationship with mobile technologies that is a different kind of relationship than we have with non-mobile technologies. And that intimacy sort of brings us and gives rise to or brings forth a peculiar sort of relationship with content. You know, we're much more engaged in mobile kinds of content. I've been using your line that you said the other day, without mobile there's no social. And not attributing it to you, so sorry. We engage with the content much more. We seem to have slightly more control over it. We produce much more of it as well. It is much more interactive. And it is so much more social, so it's a really interesting kind of thing. And I think as you start thinking about learning, the sociality of that is going to be really interesting as well. But I think it produces a lot of challenges. You know, it is this intimate thing, and it produces a lot of challenges for us as we try to develop metrics for it or try to study it. One is just the giant amount of data that is going to be generated if you're starting to look at mobile, the use of mobile and mobile learning. There was a great quote, actually, I think it was from Phil Long and George Siemens in a recent EDUCORE's review. They were talking about analytics, but talking about the issue of size, and one of them wrote that, you know, if you've got three dogs, you give them names. If you've got 10,000 cattle, not so much. You know, it's if you think about studying things in the classroom versus studying mobile usage, just the giant amount of data is sort of challenging, and you've got to have some new ways of thinking about it. It's also very small bits of data, like and often seemingly unimportant bits of data, and sort of wrapping your head around that is going to be an interesting thing. The other thing, a second challenge that I see, is that the boundaries are not clear, because you've got formal learning, you've got informal learning, you've got learning, and you've got personal stuff. You know, as I think about trying to study the use of the iPad, I know I just flow in between work, you know, hobby, personal, you know, and trying to sort of wrap your head around trying to study that is going to be an interesting kind of challenge. And that raises the third one, that there's a huge privacy issue in trying to develop metrics for this, because it is such an intimate and a device that crosses contexts. And I think a final issue is just that there is no consistency in the way that mobile is defined, and that's just going to, you know, I agree that we shouldn't get bogged down in definitions, but it's something that, in a practical way, we're going to have to wrestle with a lot. So, Dave?
Sure. This thing on. thank you. I would respond to that in kind of a dual-edged manner. I would say I agree that fundamentally assessing learning across any form factor is at the heart of all that we're trying to accomplish when it comes to analytics, when it comes to assessment. My take on it is slightly different in that I believe that what mobile presents is a sea change in representative of the consumerization of IT being brought to campus, whether that's devices that are handed out in addition to devices that people are bringing, the intimacy of that relationship, as you spoke to, and the crossing of the boundaries represents kind of a comprehensive approach to a technology that is now so pervasive and so personalized. And when I conceptualize things in terms of a look at mobile in this regard, you have to then take back and say, well, we have an opportunity now to leverage the concept of this mobile movement, the sea change towards that, to say, how can we leverage this new comprehensive technology that's permeating things to determine new ways and reinforce old ways of assessing learning? And can we look at this as, in some ways, the opportunity to reflect back on assessment mechanisms that we have put in place, whether they've been successful or not, and then also to make customizations moving forward that would account for things that mobile presents that previously haven't been. I'll turn it over to Deb, and then we can.
And that's loud. Sorry, I would agree that it all comes back to basic assessment techniques, and basically saying, are we really doing the right things to see if a technology intervention increases learning, and do we even know what those learning outcomes need to be? And I've been thinking about this a lot, about how we articulate what a tool is supposed to do anyway. Morgan talked about the social context. We could measure that, but is that really the goal of bringing a mobile technology on? And it could be. It could be that our administration wants us to have mobile technologies that increases student engagement somehow with the campus, with campus services, and so that would be a good thing to measure, but incredibly difficult to measure. How do you measure strength of relationship across different form factors? But by doing that, I think we're better able to articulate to both to faculty and to the administration that is presumably funding some of our mobile initiatives, what exactly are we trying to do with this tool or with this application, and also be able to articulate that to faculty who might want to adopt a tool. And I don't see many of us, I think we're still in our infancy for this, and so I don't see us doing a lot of tools that are really about learning particular learning objectives in a course. I see us doing a lot of mobile technologies that are more administrative that may increase student engagement or student connectedness to a campus, but may not translate into specific course goals. And I think by being able to articulate that, that helps us sell or not sell particular applications to faculty, because we can say, oh, you wanted them to learn, I'm simplifying, multiplication, but actually what they're learning is what labs are open. And so there's something, we have to be very particular about what a tool does. And so that was just my comment to your comment. Did you want to jump in with the...
I was going to ask if anybody has anything they would like to add or they would like to ask questions about this part of it before we jump to another question.
A bit of a response. Can I respond? Yeah. I actually wonder a lot. I mean, well, two things. I think you're quite interested in assessment, so mm-hmm. looking at the achievement or non-achievement of learning objectives in the context of a class. I tend to do different kinds of things, which is evaluation, so looking at the use of something and whether it's effective and whether it's working and so on. So we've got to be careful that we don't, I mean, I think
Correct.
Those two things flow into each other, but they're sort of different sorts of things. So that's one comment. The other one is I've been wondering a lot about this sort of administrative application of mobile versus the learning application of mobile. And I don't know there's as hard a boundary between those sorts of things as we sometimes think. You know, I know I've been at conferences where people say, well, I'll get on board with mobile when I actually see learning applications. And I actually don't know that it's that clear. One thing, I mean, just thinking about the lives of our students, a lot of what they're doing is just managing their work days and sort of getting to class on time, getting the work done and things like that. If we can actually provide mobile solutions that can actually help them get down the road, so, you know, like, finding a lab that's open is sort of a huge thing in some ways. You know, it can get them to the lab and working in a quicker amount of time. And I think there's sort of I'm actually fine with starting to develop these sort of more administrative things as things that will actually flow into learning in some unanticipated sort of ways. But I think they do actually sort of support learning. So,
well, I would agree that they support learning. I don't know that they flow into learning with that ease and that elegance that you say. Certainly supporting the learning and providing students with the tools they need to better manage their lives or to better manage their learnings or their learning. But I still see it as somewhat, I look back at what Chris Deedy's doing with the augmented reality. For me, that's a teaching and learning application that is completely, and it's so complex that you can't even call it one application, mm-hmm. but it's, for me, that really is clearly in the realm of meeting particular learning goals of a course.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when we talk about how do we support student management of learning, that may not be at the course level, but it may be at the administrative level where, mm-hmm. and we see this with just increases in student affairs staff or student affairs services, that there is a concerted effort across many of our campuses to provide that support. So I would say that, yeah, it's a mix. I'll give you that. That's as far as I'll go.
Well, I just want to jump in and comment because I think that the distinction between the evaluation of the effectiveness of an initiative or technology or that type of thing, as well as the assessment of the achievement of learning objectives and goals, are what I was referencing a little bit ago in terms of what the opportunity for mobile is in that presentation for us to kind of look at this as higher ed opportunity to step back and say, we have this convergence where we're seeing this technology, because it's always on, because it's always with people, that it impacts every aspect of their life, that you can create these kind of buckets of academic or administrative or community engagement conceptually and say, well, we have these concepts and these constructs for where mobile impacts the lives of students on our campuses or in our organizations. But then we also have cross-cutting elements that hit all of those. Right, so for instance, perhaps we want to talk about learning outside the classroom, and that could be specifically from within an academic course or specifically within the construct of the university, which might lend itself more towards administrative or towards community building or engagement things. So when we start to conceptualize how establishing metrics for M-learning, so to speak, to get to our title, you know, from my vantage point, it's important for us as educators, whether we be administrators or faculty members, to consider, and you know, maybe this is my roots in growing up, where you know you're educating the entire person regardless, and you're looking at all aspects of their lives. And I think this becomes that.
David is at a Jesuit institution.
I'm not at one, but I was trained by one. But this conceptualization of here is this opportunity for us to look at this from the vantage point that says, what's been effective evaluating technology initiatives, right? What are those metrics that are used and have been used historically to establish the effectiveness of, say, the mobile computing program at Seton Hall, where we've handed out laptops since 1997? At the same time, what are we doing to assess the actual learning that takes place, and can we look at this, and can we collaborate as leaders in these organizations to say, here are things that we know are effective, or here are methods that we use to assess these elements, and can we collaborate on those? And then, you know, the big data that we don't want to name individual pieces of could actually give us insight into that question: Do administrative applications or evaluation of initiatives, can that give us insight and feed into, you know, a structure that may then provide opportunities for faculty or for students to promote active learning externally to their classroom more easily if we're able to understand usage patterns or if we're able to understand tendencies? And if can we construct something that allows us to see those cross-cutting elements as well as how those cross-cutting elements within those individual buckets can be applied and assessed?
And before I jump on to that next question, I think we can do that if we have that specificity. So if we just say our students engaged in active learning and we haven't defined what we mean by active learning, then that's going to be difficult to measure. And so I think that we need to have that specificity that's linked to clear goals, and then we can do those measures.
Comes down to the definitions.
I would think that maybe we want to ask if you all have any mobile learning or any mobile initiatives on your campus, and if you'd like to share, maybe are they on the administrative side, or are they on the academic side, and what kind of assessment, if any, or are you thinking about what you might want to learn from these projects? Anybody want to share? I'll hand the mic over.
I don't need to be in stereo. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Hi, I'm Katie Vale, and I'm Director of Academic Technology at Harvard. And we're doing both administrative, we have a sort of an administrative mobile campus platform where we use the Moto Labs Kurogo platform that some of you might use for everything from, you know, the online library, shuttle schedules, course information, and just a lot of that sort of just-in-time data, you know, that's location aware. And that part has been more in response to just, again, trying to, you know, the students always have the devices on them. They don't bring their laptops to class necessarily, but they always have their phone. So trying to make it easier for them to figure out, you know, which library has my book or the book that I need right now, so I don't have to, you know, walk 3/4 of a mile and find that library doesn't have it, or, you know, in February when it's sleeting, when's the next shuttle coming, and just, or where is Professor So-and-so's office. So that part was really much more of a reaction to the just-in-time information needs. But then what's been more of, I think, an issue is working on the pedagogical reasons and, you know, what we're, you know, the part I'm responsible for is our residential campus, and so, you know, why do we need mobile technology for a residential campus? And so we've been focusing on kind of the frequent practice opportunity applications. So for courses where they want the students, while they're waiting in line at the cafeteria, to pull out their phone and play with a huge data set or do some flashcards or something like that. So on the teaching side, we've been much more, you know, learning goals oriented of what exactly does the professor want to have done and building for that. But I feel like on the administrative side, it's been more reactive of just trying to keep up with the students' life and help them manage their work day, as somebody put it.
That's interesting, because I think that looking at it from the standpoint of the just-in-time information to promote the lives of the students and ease the lives of the students becomes much more of a, oh, well, we need to have an app for that. Our institution needs to have an app. And what's the most frequent app that we see across college campuses? The one that provides all of our RSS feeds from everything. You know, we have our athletics information and our news information, and we have availability of our labs. And I think that's common. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think there's value to that. And I think we can learn from that a great deal about the lives of our students and when we're looking at their role on campus and how they interact. It's very interesting.
Do we have anybody else who would like to share for their own campus experience with the mobile initiative?
Yeah, I'm Julian from Georgia State University. I'm Director of Professional Services, which includes our instructional design team. We spoke at a pre-conference on this. We've deployed about 350 iPads to the hands of our freshmen as a part of their freshman learning community experience. We chose that particular program because the students take all their classes together. So instead of handing them an iPad so that they could go to art history and then not really know what to do with it in their other classes, they would have sort of 5 different classes they could take together. We tried to do some assessment kind of throughout the semester. We're inviting the faculty members back in to talk to us, just sort of interview style. Got some success there. We had a little bit of abandonment our first time. You know, cause a couple of faculty members decided that this really isn't working for me. The students are more distracted by the device than they are finding it useful. And we kind of turned that back on them. You know, did you find ways to engage? And it's sort of that chicken and the egg problem. You know, do you redesign your course entirely just to take advantage of a device? And if you're doing that, what was the point? You know, why change your class just to make the device useful? The device should be making learning more, work a little bit better. But we also, the second reason we chose this particular set of courses is it's run by the group that does all the metrics on the campus, all the retention and graduation and progression. So over time, we'll be able to kind of track, did freshmen coming in who were given a device and, you know, had new and unique learning opportunities, did they stay with us longer? Did they make higher grades and those kinds of things? So we're looking forward to kind of gaining a little bit of that information. And we also touched on briefly, while the devices weren't in use in class, we then repurposed them for some administrative things, like during our freshman orientation, we would actually trot them out and have 200 students register for classes at the same time, you know, which just saved logistically, we're a large urban campus, saved running our students around like crazy. And we hoped kind of giving them that impression that, hey, you've chosen a university that takes advantage of cool mobile technology. Now give it back, you know.
You get a T-shirt.
Yeah. And actually, if I'd like to jump in and actually answer this question or give some ideas about it, because Jules reminded me that we really do have some assessment projects that we have ahead of ourselves. there are, I think, two different ways or two different methodological approaches that we can take with this. One is harvesting data and analyzing that, doing analytics, going to our IR department and say, and talking about retention. Again, if retention is the goal, then I think, and it's a laudable goal, then that's a great thing to measure, and that's one way you can measure it. I'm a real big fan of Nancy Fried Foster. I don't know if any of you know her. She is an anthropologist who is on staff at the University of Rochester Libraries. And I just envy the libraries for having an anthropologist on staff. And what she does is she uses ethnographic methods to determine the usability and the effectiveness of library spaces and tools. So she does. She uses methods that are really key to studying people. She starts with observation. And by the way, if you ever get a chance to take one of her workshops, pair up with somebody from the libraries, because that's a requirement, and go, because it's very worthwhile. But she starts with observation. She just goes, and for 2 hours you sit and you watch people. You just watch what they're doing. Now, it's a little bit difficult with mobile devices, except you could go to a bus stop. You could be on a bus. You could see how many students. You can just do counting. You can do description. Are they pulling out their phones to do flashcards at the cafe in line? You know, just observing, you can get a lot of good data. Another way you could get good data is to observe through network connections. We do have some privacy issues there. However, we talked yesterday about observing through network connections by partnering with students who are willing to open up their, at least their connections, certainly not their content. We don't want to know what their content is. But at least if we can see where they're going and what tools they're using, and say, you know what, we're just starting some of these initiatives. We need your help. And getting them involved in that process as well. The second tool she uses is interviews and just sitting down. I think, Jules, you said that, just sitting down talking to faculty. How is this working for you? How is this working in the class? What did you use? What didn't you use? Doing the same thing with students. I'm on an anti-survey role right now. I never want to send out a survey again if I can help it, because I'm not convinced that it's the best way to get good information. And some of my staff here know that I've reacted strongly when they've said, let's send out a survey, and I've said, no, let's sit down and talk to people first. That's where we're going to get the rich data. And then she also has focus groups so that you can get people talking. You know how valuable those can be. To get some real good qualitative data. So I think it's, again, a mix of the quantitative data harvesting and the qualitative, where you're really doing the observation, the interviews, and the focus group. Yes? Because we've got viewers at home.
Okay. I guess with the focus groups and the interviews and all that kind of thing, if you've got the time and money, they're the best way to go, especially with this. At Langara College, Vancouver, BC, we've tried to do that, but we didn't have the time and money to sit down and interview a bunch of people and do those things. So we went with a survey. We wanted ethnographic analysis, but we couldn't get it. We couldn't get what we wanted. That's why I'm here.
And I have to say, I think if you have a certain level of conscience, you actually do have it if you've got any grad students and you need to exploit them. So that's one way to do it. The other thing that we do is we have a program for writing and rhetoric program on our campus. And a lot of them, there's one professor in particular who teaches evaluation. He teaches writing through evaluation. So what he's always doing is having his students do projects for us, and we adore it. Because, you know, we're not going to get publishable data, but we're going to get students talking to other students, and they're going to have to write that up for us. So that helps as well. And then I wanted to point out another technique that Nancy uses in the libraries. She has big sheets of paper, and she has students draw what they think the ideal library layout should be, what services should be where. And so that's a good way to get usability data back. And we talked about it yesterday. Morgan doesn't remember it, but we did. Where you can give students a piece of paper, and you can have it out And this is a very low time investment. Have it out and say, I want you to draw what your ideal. You click on this tool for the campus, what comes up? What are the different tools that you would want to have, and describe them a little bit. And that can be an on your own, have paper out, a comment book. I know our libraries do that, where they just open up a big, huge dictionary and put paper in it, and students just draw on it and write comments like, I hate the fact that this little desk you have on the chair is 6 inches across because I can't put anything on it but a cup of coffee. So you get some good data, and I think we could use those sorts of techniques for low-cost investment in assessment.
And just to reiterate, and I do remember that conversation, but and I've used some of those techniques in a really lightweight sort of way, and it actually has been quite good to get some sort of preliminary data that's been quite nice. And we were trying to think about how we could adapt that, because I've done it with space. So specifically, you know, we're redoing our learning commons, so spend $100 worth of coffee cards, 2 hours of my time, just get them to, you know, and some students are not creative, but others really detailed, and you can start to get a lot of data there. So perhaps think about ways that you can use that to gather more mobile data, you know, and sort of adapt those. But yeah, setting up focus groups and analyzing the stuff is really time intensive. So I think we need some of these lightweight ways. And for me, evaluation is about the reduction of uncertainty. So yeah, you don't always need publishable kinds of things and stuff like that. You want to reduce the uncertainty. You want enough information so that you can make a better decision as a, in my case, as an administrator.
I keep going back to this concept of all of these elements that come up as issues for assessing learning and evaluating all initiatives on campus, regardless of being mobile. And what does the opportunity that mobile what is the opportunity that might be presented by mobile devices becoming now so present? And I think back to the conversation on learning analytics the other day, and this question of how can we use what we pull in, and also at the same time, how can we shape what we're trying to assess and what we're trying to learn. And I don't think there's anything wrong with us as leaders in higher education to say to our students, this technology is impacting your life more now than it's impacting ours, and it's going to continue to do so. We all, as experienced educators, have experience with trying to ascertain what the impact or the results of these types of changes will be, but we need your help to construct these and have it be that kind of double loop assessment mechanism where we're bringing students in to not only determine from them their experiences with the technology, their hopes for the technology, their uses of the technology, and then also to feed back to them, what do you make of what you and your peers are doing with this technology, and how can you help inform this institution and all of our institutions about mistakes that we might be making with presumptions about it, and mistakes that we might be making about your own affinity for it or your own uses of it. You know, I do make the comment, and I do stick to it, that mobile and social are inherently tied and are mutually dependent. So when we're looking at cross-cutting assessment, we're looking at evaluations, we're looking at how do we then, you know, what we can gain from that are not only insights about how often do they check their bus schedule and look at the menu, but how do they then interact with their peers? And what does that then tell us about how we can foster that type of engagement both within the entire institution, but then take it down to a more granular course aspect and say, can we put in place mechanisms for the students to capitalize on these things outside of the class or with each other that may or may not, depending on what we've gleaned from this information, foster a better engagement with their coursework and therefore the institution and therefore have a higher success rate accomplishment. This is all very high level, and obviously we need to be worked out in detail, but I think that's the opportunity that the quote of what does M-learning do or how do we establish metrics presents. I think too often we refer back to traditional methods. And we often confuse the difference between evaluation and assessment, especially those of us who are at, you know, these linking type events, right, where we're linking the technology and the learning so distinctly. And I think this is an opportunity to actually link them. And if we do so from the standpoint of I don't need to simply put an app out because, you know, Seton Hall University needs to have an app, so therefore we need to put something out. I think everybody has pretty much responded to that push. I don't think we should make that same mistake with assessment. I don't think we should necessarily just say, we've done assessment projects before, let's just apply those to this and see what we get, or we've done evaluations before, let's apply those and see what we get, but to take that step back and say, before we do this, let's take this opportunity to therefore ensure that what we're doing is engaging our community members who are going to be impacted by it most distinctly, and also help them shape what we're trying to pull out of it and how to then apply that knowledge to being more strategic and apply that information to uses as we go forward. So. Yeah, I think I've kind of underscored my whole question throughout, so I'm not going to waste too much time. In fact, I would prefer to hear other people's thoughts on the matter. But I think fundamentally what I believe we have an opportunity to do is to look at the different silos that we've always had in terms of these assessment or evaluation mechanisms, and also look at different intent about learning opportunities. So there's always been these pie in the sky, how do you achieve active learning? There's always been this pie in the sky, how do you do student engagement? And those types of things where the definition is so difficult to achieve, yet activity or action or the actual process of using these systems can actually be looked at or discussed or measured. And I think given the challenges that higher education is facing, not only with the consumerization of IT and all the changes in expected outcomes and the requirements for analytics, I think it's important that we don't rush and that we look at mLearning as that buffer to say, we know this is here, we know this is coming, we don't know exactly what the long-term implications of it are, and we don't know exactly how the technology is going to continue to evolve. We do know that this device is going to do what our laptops do, it's going to do what the tablets do, it's going to do things that they don't do. So there's this kind of Venn diagram of where all of these activities come to play, and then how do we examine that as a vehicle for everything? I think the concept of the role of higher education being affected, you know, everyone talks about how it's going to be disrupted, the bubble's going to burst, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But where's the value that we can now bring to shaping the use of these things moving forward? And how do we accomplish that if we're not engaging the users more directly in feeding that in and also looking at it as the comprehensive, all-encompassing technology in a way that we haven't seen quite before? We haven't seen people who are that connected to their laptop. We don't have that personal connection to other technologies than we do. For many people, it's the last thing they look at before they go to sleep and the first thing they look at when they wake up in the morning. Around the world, we're seeing it being used for payments. We're seeing it being used for, you know, NFC, near-field communication, to tap to exchange information. We're seeing it being used to create content, to consume content. We're seeing all of these things. And in various areas, we see those elements, but we haven't seen them converged in such a way that is already permeating the lives of our students, our faculty members, and our administrators. So I think from the standpoint of the concept of mLearning, I think it's critical for us to widen our vision of that to say we need to look not just at curricular activities and not just at administrative activities, but how, you know, what are those cross-cutting elements that can give us insight into all of those and help us shape a vision of the student and their lives and learning at an institution.
And I'm going to go back to something you said earlier where we just don't want to do the same old assessments or the same old evaluations. And I would argue that if we were doing them correctly in the first place, we probably would want to. Because you talk about what is the value we bring as higher education organizations, that really gets to what are we trying to do and are we doing it? And I think those are the basic questions of both assessment and evaluation. And I think if we go back to the basics, actually, which I don't think we do right now, and ask those questions of the mobile applications, we're going to get answers like, well, it's partly to help students feel a sense of connectedness to campus. We want students to establish a network of peer-to-peer relationships that may, and so there's one goal, that may improve their ability to articulate a cogent argument. I mean, so we could have lots of interrelated value statements or goals or objectives that we have that we can measure. So I would argue that we actually do need to go back to the effective practices.
You're absolutely right. The effective practices, yes. I'm not suggesting that we abandon all hope while you enter here, right? I'm suggesting that we don't default, right? I mean, in the matter of speaking, there's so much to be done, and people say, oh, you need an assessment component. Well, we have this. Let's just customize it for that. I think it requires a much deeper analysis of what was effective and incorporating those things, because I think that's right. Those techniques and methodologies and protocol that have been effective historically should have those elements that are effectively included brought in, because not only does that align mobile and mobile initiatives, whether they be academic, administrative, or engagement or whatnot, to previous efforts in technology, but also to previous learning research and whatnot. And I think that that's important, and that speaks to that Venn diagram kind of visual in my head of, you know, we need to tie these together. So there's elements from NESI, which was referenced, that are going to be of critical value and can add a great deal of insight into mobile if applied and then customized. And every campus will need to be able to customize and adjust things. But at the same time, there are those core things that we can identify as having been effective. And now we have an opportunity to improve those that weren't.
Yes, I can.
Seven.
Well, I think now would be a good time to just kind of open it up to any questions that you may have in general about anything that's been said or what's not been said. And we can go there. Let me go here first, and then we'll come here.
And the other thing to think about is if you have enough tools when you walk out the door to make a difference when you get back to your campus or to do something, that would be interesting to me.
So maybe a little bit of a contrarian philosophical comment. I wonder sometimes if we aren't trying too hard with this assessment thing. You know, I think back to an earlier day when we transitioned from slide rule to calculators, for instance. I don't remember the agony of trying to decide or trying to assess the value of moving to the calculator in calculus classes versus a slide rule. We just simply, the professors decided, yes, we're going to use calculators instead of slide rules. And maybe somebody thought down the line, well, how does this class compare in terms of their learning of calculus, since they use a calculator, to this class that's still using the slide rule? But I don't recall a formal process for doing that. You guys have talked about the fact that what we're dealing with are tools, you know. And I don't think you can adequately assess the value of the tool unless you take it into context, really down to the individual faculty member, the individual class. You know, you're never going to be able to get, I don't think, a realistic assessment of M-learning global, you know, or even on campus-wide. You got to find a way to focus it down to how is the individual professor using the tools that the students already bring to the class to be more effective. But the key question is learning occurring? Not M-learning, but is learning occurring? And you can do that whether you have a smartphone or simply a piece of, you know, a pad and a pencil. You're still evaluating the same learning, but does the tool add value to the learning? I think this, and I'm not sure I'm hearing a lot of, we're agonizing over the big picture, M-learning or, you know, the analytics of technology, but I'm not sure you're ever going to get there. We're never going to catch up with the technology. And as soon as we figure out that, smartphones are making a difference, we moved on to something else, and now what do you do with that data? It's a nice historical fact, but now what do you do with it moving forward?
And I can jump in for a little bit. I don't know if I like your example about, and I know, Keith, so I'm allowed to say this. I don't know if I like your example about the slide rule calculator, because I think there were a lot of debates about it, a lot of debates about whether or not we were dumbing down the classroom or whether... Yeah.
Debates and predictions, but how much assessment?
I'll bet they still did assessment, but don't forget that was a different point in time when there weren't assessment. There wasn't the need for assessment. And I would say that with higher education under attack and budgets under siege, sorry to use all the war metaphors, that's appropriate for you, that we really do have to apply assessment to whatever we're spending money on or whatever we're insisting students spend time using. So I would say we need to do all that. For the teaching and learning, does it go right back down to the learning objectives for the individual professor? Absolutely. And I think that can we anticipate every technology and have a specific learning assessment for a particular tool? No, I think we'd never be able to do that. Can we, however, provide faculty members with the tools they need, the basic assessment tools they need to evaluate whether or not a technology intervention is appropriate and working in their class? Absolutely, I think we can do that. And I think that's one of the things, Mark Werner isn't here right now, but one of the things that he'll be working on over the next year is to develop a faculty assessment toolkit. So if they want to say, hey, I'm going to try tool X, that we've got a simple pre and post test maybe, we can do a measure of change in grades maybe, even though we know grades are only loosely affiliated with learning, that we can pass those tools on to the individual faculty members who may be then asked to justify, or we can, you know, we can also bribe them or pay them to do that on our behalf.
And that's often the case. And I would even comment that to extend the part of the reason why we defined mobile in the way we did is exactly that question, right? That you're not looking necessarily to say these are assessments just for mobile. In some ways, another way of looking at mobile and definition for it is we're not looking at the device being mobile so much as the individual being mobile and the capability of capital, you know, whatever device that might be. So the technology can change, but they're constantly connected, they're always engaged, or they have access to something that they have a personal closeness to. That then gives us the opportunity to say, I don't care whether it's iPod Touch or Android or a Windows Phone or you know, a Palm Pilot or whatever it might be, what can we do to develop constructs that will engage us, that will inform our decisions to do things like what Deb was saying, right? If a faculty member then comes into an instructional design team and says, I'm really looking for ways of helping my students engage this content outside of the classroom, or how do I help them bring these deeper thoughts into practical application, then maybe there's information we've gleaned from some sort of big data effort in this that says using mobile can help promote that type of peer-to-peer activity. So maybe that's an avenue you want to consider.
I mostly have been trying to think of a engineering joke to make about Keith, because it was such a good question. It's like, I've got to knock him down from that. I mean, I think it was really... Question back there.
No, I was going to tell you, I'm at Anderson University. My name is Ben Dean. I'm the director of instructional design there, and we have a one-to-one iPad initiative. And it was opt-in for faculty, not opt-in for students. 95% of faculty chose to get one. And I approach this as an instructional design problem, not as a technology problem or a technology initiative. And I think that's where some of the doubt about it as a technology sort of come in. I approached it, and we did the course redesign approach. And I ingrained in the day one that I don't care if you use the technology or not. You're redesigning your class from the bottom up to make it pedagogically sound and to make it engaging. Now, it turns out that they all infused the device into their classroom, but my goal was just to help them find ways where they could use that device to enable them to do the things that they wanted to, so the purpose and the goals and the objectives that they set. And the way that we approach it, or I approach it, is to look at it as two separate pieces. So use the device as a resource or use it as a tool. Most technologies have failed because they've been solely used as resources in the past. But I think this device, as a resource and a tool, a resource is something you just use to access, retrieve, and or regurgitate information. You don't really do anything. You don't build something or create something with it. If you use it as a tool, you're building, creating, doing, manipulating data. And if you can make those distinctions and get them towards a tool-based approach, mm-hmm. I think you'll find some interesting things. Now, we had faculty go in both directions to fit their style of teaching. So from the research-based or the resource-based approach, they were taking the technology and delivering their lectures outside of class. So they would create, you know, 15 to 20-minute videos. Students watch those, come into class, and we took a history class or intro to Bible class. And they watched their lectures outside, but they turned the in-class meetings into a lab, which is very much different than you would see in a traditional lecture-style class. So that's how they did all the engagement in that class. In class, very little technology. Outside, use it as a resource. Where we saw the most interesting things as a tool-based approach was in our biology classes, and they were doing cellular processes like mitosis and meiosis, and students were building stop-frame animations of these things, which would, you know, before the iPad was been very difficult to do in terms of getting it done in one session. They were able to put all these things together, produce those, and we saw dramatic improvements in learning outcomes on both of those approaches. In the intro to Bible class, we saw great improvement, which is one measure, and you can take that with a grain of salt, but it didn't create great inflation at the top. It created, it pulled the D and F students up. At least that's what the data showed after one semester. And the learning outcomes based on pre and post assessments for the cellular processes was dramatic. So I think it's just how you look at it and capturing the right pieces of data. So we used survey. I use a design-based approach. So we use qualitative and quantitative data. And it's obviously a formative process. So we're just building as we go along. And doing some attitudinal stuff with student and faculty as well. But I think if you look at it in the context of how I approach it, and what I think is most effective is this instructional design problem first. So let's get the pedagogy there, and then find ways to infuse the tool, because if you build a class around the technology, you're probably going to fail, because it's more about the content of the class as opposed to the technology itself.
Yeah, thank you.
I just had a simple question for you guys.
Is it on? I was wondering if any of you have built an assessment model that you wanted to maybe share the basics of with us, or an evaluative tool, and maybe just kind of tell us what it worked, maybe briefly tell us what your findings were.
Odd you should ask that.
It is right, funny that you should ask that. One of the motivations behind this and one of the discussions that we've had in developing this has been fueled by my desire to kind of put together a project and dedicate some time over the course through the center that I run with Mike, Center for Mobile Research and Innovation, in conjunction with some of our partners to try and pull together resources. And what I'll do now is I will invite and ask you to participate. And what I'm going to be doing is an analysis of effective rubrics that have been used or assessment protocol that have been used, and try to collaborate with institutions across the country, around the world, to try and determine what are effective mechanisms, whether they be from traditional or historic protocol or methodologies, or whether they have adjustments, and then to try and synthesize some of these. And the idea being that at some point at the end of this year, kind of launching from now, that we would have some mechanism that we could all then deploy in different ways and kind of look and see what data we have and determine the effectiveness of it. And it would be some sort of, it would be a collaborative effort to identify what these mechanisms can be, what they should be, and how we can deploy them and put them in such a way that they're customizable for the down to the course level, but also ensure that there's a consistency of data being collected so we can see if there's distinctions between use cases or usage patterns as well as effectiveness of projects. So while not as of yet, and we, you know, at Seton Hall we have done mobile projects and we have done initiatives. We've handed out, you know, it was back in 2009 when we were handing out unlocked devices with no plans to students and saying, here, use Wi-Fi and Fring to communicate, and you know, you can do all these things on campus, and then handing out iPads at another time and Android tablets at another time. So there's initiatives, and I know that the assessment there has been spot, but there's been no consistency. And I think that's part of my motivation for trying to do this. And, you know, I'm kind of putting myself out there to say, please, if you have data, and that data being an assessment mechanism, not necessarily the results of it, but if you have mechanisms, please share them with me, and we'll work together to try and figure out what role and then what value we can bring that back to your institutions for what happens when we launch it or when we're publishing what the results of that are. It is a call to collaborative action, and I would encourage you, even if you have hesitation and skepticism about this, to reach out to me and express that, because I think all of this needs to happen. And I guess, like I said before, I'm not worried about the devices themselves. I'm not worried about the specific nature of whether it be the form factor. What I'm worried about, the common underlying consistent. See across that, the use cases. And I'm also worried about this being an opportunity for us to leverage this sea change to make positive effect on our own assessment mechanisms, our own evaluation mechanisms, and then to encourage our own institutions to bring the students into this process in order to affect positive change. It's a simple question with so many potential answers, and that's why, you know, when I put out the concept that there are these buckets, right, and then there's cross-cutting things, right, the value of that may be that the students looked at their institution and said, wow, you're thinking about my day-to-day activity and my ease of access to information, which then changes, and the, you know, there's research in the engagement literature that shows that the faculty member is the most key person for engaging, and then that leads to student retention. Yeah, and that's what, you know, when you look at how comprehensive mobile is in our own lives, and then you take that and apply it to what it is at these institutions, you have to step back and say the only way we're going to get any insightful information by any of our assessments is to look at it from this global kind of pie in the sky area, and then power down into that data to determine if there's correlation, if there's causation, what do we see about these things, even if it is a combination of anecdotal and hard data. So,
hey, David, we're like 2 minutes beyond nine. So what I'm going to do is say I'm going to invite everybody to continue the conversation.
And
there's a sign-up sheet that's going around.
That's right.
Whether you have data to share or you know rubrics, or just interested as a critic or as a proponent, being part of the collaborative effort I think will be very valuable for all of us. So I really do encourage you to take part. I'd like to thank the panelists, and I'd like to thank all of you for coming.